Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we're talking about another Don Bluth movie as we continue our not Disney animated month. And we cover the very bizarre Glenn Campbell movie, Rockadoodle, starring, well, a pile of people that should have no business in animation. But it's a very, very strange movie where a rooster who believes the sun can rise, turns out it rises without him, so he becomes Elvis. In honor of the release of Elvis, we decided to do Rockadoodle. Anyway, so with this in mind, thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, and thank you for sharing. And, just thank you. Bye, guys.
Welcome to Miami Movies. This week, we're scraping the bottle of the Don Bluth barrel.
We're just about done with this poor bastard.
We watched Rockadoodle, a movie which even Google doesn't know how to spell correctly. I'm Nick Hoffman, your host and riffer on Cineprovident panel. We have...
And I am author Matthew W. Quinn, who wondered if he was on acid when he came up with this.
Hello, this is Daniel, a contributor to popdose.com. I'm currently doing a viewing of the bottom 100 IMDb movies, so join me in that and...
Pray for him.
Speaking of which, I have no idea how the hell this movie isn't on that list.
Oh, it's not. It's not.
It's the problem is this is a fine line between mediocrity and disappointment. This is right in between. And here's the honest shame of all of this. How do you make Charles Nelson Reilly look so bad?
If you're Alec Baldwin on Saturday Night Live from back in the day.
No, I mean, like, honestly, rather than watching, I was just drinking a whiskey and texting Daniel about the cast. This cast is insane. And it's not like good... Insane. It's just literally crazy how they got these this weird gangle of people together.
All right, who was on Match Game 76? They're going to be in this movie.
Eddie Deason.
No. Oh, fuck yeah, Eddie Deason's in this movie.
Christopher Plummer, wasn't he Captain Von Trapp?
Yes, he was.
Among other things.
Among many other things.
Trapp has been in something like 300 movies. And
he was one of those guys who, if you asked him nicely, he'd do your movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got the workaholic kind of mindset of, well,
Bryan Cranston or Chris Lee.
Or yeah. Nicolas Cage.
I don't think...
That has a lot to do with debt and castle ownage. I mean, yeah. I don't know. You've probably seen Chris Plummer in Inside Man, The
yep.
Insider, The Last Station, Rudyard Kipling, and The Man Who Would Be King, The Full Measure, Knives Out. I mean, the dude's been in everything. And I love him. And then he's in this, and you're just like, but why?
He was very good in Knives Out. That was a good movie.
He was the writer, right?
Yes.
And Chris, and in this, he's a big owl whose size grows depending on who's looking at him. Because sometimes he's bigger than a pig, which owls are wont to do. And other times he's smaller than a pig, which is the same pig. And that's not how pigs work, probably. I'm not a pigatologist. Ooh, Kermit. So then we have a chicken called Chanticleer. Played by Glenn Campbell, everyone's favorite musician.
I have no idea who the hell he was. I saw him in the credits and I'm like, is that supposed to mean something? Apparently it does.
That's because you're a young lad.
Because the year that the album Nevermind and Pearl Jam's 10 came out, we're caring about Glenn Campbell. Also, Matt, here's your problem. Because you're right, but also... Who, then, is this movie for? Because kids are not going to go see a musician from the 70s.
Their parents, perhaps? To take the kids?
Well, it didn't work, because parents didn't see this either. This was the flop that killed Bluth.
Yeah. I'm a Don Bluth fan here, but, you know, this killed Don Bluth's own studio in Titan A.E., previous episode, killed Fox
Way
Animation
back.
Studios.
Yeah. Didn't you meet Don Bluth at one point?
Yeah, I met Don Bluth and Gary Goldman at the Jewish Film Festival in 2011, I think, or maybe it was 2012.
Oh, there you go.
That was the 20th anniversary of this movie. Did you ask about it?
No. We're talking about An American Tale and why he left Disney.
American Tale is a masterpiece.
Isn't Don Bluth Mormon?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Goldman, probably the one that was at the Jewish Film Festival.
Well, I think they were both there. I'll look up my article.
I'm sure they were both there, but...
American Tale... Like, that is prime cut Bluth. That is a masterpiece.
You know, for a while, I think Bluth's problem was he was stuck in that old school Disney mentality, right? Like in the 70s and early 80s when they just had no clue what they were doing.
Right.
So he could stand out. He actually had some good material to work with. Secret of Nim, he had American Tail, he had Land Before Time. And then the Disney Renaissance happened when they got rid of basically that entire crew and replaced it with Jeff Katzenberg on top, and he actually knew even more what he was doing.
Well, but here's the thing. I mean, to your point, this is going against classic Disney movies. 1990, previous episode, DuckTales, Treasures of the Lost Land.
Okay, maybe not that one.
No, but I'm joking, because that was Disney Toons. But we have 89, Little Mermaid, 1990, Rescuers Down Under, 91, Beauty and the Beast, and 92, Aladdin. And then there's this. And which one are you going to take your kids to seven times? Aladdin, the Treasure of the Lost Lamp. But also, 1991, you're seeing Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Like, but I mean, that also tells me, to me, the difference. Because the animation between Beauty and the Beast and this is leaps and bounds. The scene where the flood comes, we'll get to the live animation, the live action nonsense.
Oh,
nonsense
my God.
In this.
This movie reminds me of Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day from 1968.
You would know about Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day, wouldn't you, Matt?
Oh, yeah, I brought that to my preschool when I was five, and that's when I lost my first tooth.
Everyone knows where they were when they lost their first tooth.
So there I was, losing a tooth, bringing movies from the 70s.
Bringing joy to my little preschool friends.
The Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh is 1977. There you go.
Oh, bother.
I remember when I broke a toe and brought victory through air power, 1943, to my preschool crowd. Okay, so, smash cut to a rooster that raises the sun. Fine, we've entered Aesop's Fables, you know, Apollo is driving a chariot, we're fine.
This is a French play originally, wasn't it?
Are you saying that there's a French play about a giant cock?
Yes.
Son of a bitch, does it sing?
I think in the John Waters version it does, but...
right. I'm just a bad cock, and they... Thank you, John.
But yes, in the French play, there's a singing cock. And my understanding is that's the same basic plot. You know, a rooster thinks he raises the sun by crowing, and one day he doesn't crow, and the sun still comes up. And apparently it's meant to be a class commentary.
Well, but here's the thing. The second you introduce real danger and real threats, this becomes nonsense, right? Like, it reminds me of something like Ferdinand the Bull, where, like, you're a bull. You're supposed to be mean, but he secretly likes flowers and isn't that mean. Like, that's a kid's story. And if you told me there was a rooster who believed that the sun rose and fall because of him, that's the start to a kid's story.
Only then a evil owl pays another rooster to try to murder him, and then he straight up murders him, and the sun rises anyway, and it breaks his heart.
Walt Disney actually wanted to make this movie back in the 40s.
That would have made more sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what
George
happened.
George H.W. Bush's America has no time for Chanticleer. But I mean, like, in the because this...
Barb, I think we do have time for Chanticleer, Barb.
Hi, Barb.
Although, can you imagine Walt Disney deciding between this nonsense and, you said 40s, right?
Right.
Song of the South. Because it's the same thing, animation interacting with the real world.
Oh, there you go.
Right?
You
know, although I would take Zippity Doodah over any of these songs.
Oh, yeah.
Any of the jokes?
Even the Batteries song?
Oh, my God. Can you help me?
Christ on
why
a cracker.
Why the hell are there songs in this movie?
Because it's called Rock-A-Doodle. And when you have a title as tight as Rock-A-Doodle, you're sticking with Rock-A-Doodle. I mean, I have no answer.
I'm still upset. That's all I'm gonna say.
I just want there to be like a pitch meeting just once. I wanna like a little pee hole camera where I'm watching someone give a pitch, the director stand up and slap him in the face and walk away. Because that's what should have happened. And then smash cut to the real world, and they should have just said no. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So just Daniel, since you're as mad as I am, can you give me the plot synopsis real quick?
Oh, this movie has no plot, at least nothing that holds up. We've hinted at it a little bit. It's based on a an old fable that was adapted into a play about this rooster who crows every morning, and he thinks his crows make the sun come up. And in this version, the rooster is a sort of Elvis figure. He doesn't sound a thing like Elvis whenever he talks, which is weird. But one day, this Grand Duke, who's this big owl, and that's Chris Plummer from Sound of Music, among many other things, pays somebody to fight him before the sun comes up.
I had a plot before my cousin Weird Owl took over and ruined everything involving music.
Oh, can you imagine if Weird Owl was in this movie?
I've got to stop that Chanticleer!
Anyway, so he defeats the assassin that's the owl sent to kill him, but the sun still rises, so he realizes he's worthless and leaves for the city. But after he leaves, this big rainstorm comes along, and then it turns out that's all a framing device of this mom reading a book to her kid while the river near their house is flooding, and dad's trying to get sandbags down there, and then he turns into a kitten and helps the other farm animals find
the rooster. I want you to stop for a second, because this is, first of all, when we have the Princess Bride-esque reveal, I never comment on this shit, but I saw it on Amazon. It was streaming, right?
Right.
This was the worst transfer I've ever seen. And there's dust on everything. When they show the starry sky, you can see the dust on the damn thing. The only reason I bring it up is they clearly used a different camera aperture for the live action. So it's like jumping from a, like, it's like jumping from a soap opera. Gee, Mom, do you think the pigs are going to drown? To an animation, like, I mean, and it's still him, so it's still watercolor, and it's still pretty. But, like, it's the most jarring transition of this poor child who's dying of dyspepsia. I don't know. He's lying in bed and sweating, and eventually they think he's dead? Because his mom can't wake him, and at that point you call the shovel man. Like, I don't know what's going on in this movie.
And the whole thing reminds me of the early 90s, like, off-brand kids movies like A Mouse and a Motorcycle.
That's totally it. Or, stay tuned for, well, I mean, I don't know if we'll do it because it's kind of fun. But, like, if it just stayed in the live-action realm and had these weird talking animals, something like Mousetrap, that's fine. But the fact that it jumps back and forth and this cat, like, this kid turns into a kitten that looks like it's out of a different Don Bluth movie.
Wearing a Davy Crockett outfit.
Banjo and the Woodpile Cat.
Yes, he looks like he belongs in Fievel Goes West. It's that same face structure, which makes it a Don Bluth movie. But almost no one else looks like they belong in a Bluth movie. So, Sudsy and I were arguing on this.
That dog reminds me of the sheriff from Fievel Goes West.
But he didn't do Fievel Goes West.
No, he didn't.
Right. Mm. And so Sudsy and I were not arguing, but like on the end credits, it doesn't list him as a director. But everywhere else it does. So I wonder if it's not like when we did Mystery Men and everyone says it was Tim Burton, but he bailed at the last minute.
I don't think that's the case with Mystery Men. I do think it's the case where Don Bluth was like, what the? Looked at the movie.
I'm just going
like,
to executive produce this nonsense.
Yeah. I think his studio was almost broke at this point because he'd already done a couple bombs, and this was like his last chance, and obviously that didn't work out.
And again, I love Don Bluth. Some of his stuff, like, is truly remarkable, but like he brought down Toon Film Studios, so at this point you just got to be like, guy, I'm sorry, man, shut up and play the hits.
Yeah, he's trying to kickstart a Dragon's Lair movie now.
Well, because okay, so let's just hit the high notes. We've done Secrets of Nim, that's mm-hmm. good. American Tale, that's good. A Land Before Time, good. All Dogs Go to Heaven, most recent episode. Ooh,
kind of shaky.
Kind of dark for a kid's movie, too.
There were some good moments in that movie, though.
Then this. No one saw Thumbelina. Did you see Thumbelina? I never saw
Thumbelina. Way back in the day at a kid's summer camp where they bust us all to the Dollar Theater and screened it for us. And
all right, you're learning today.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Then we did Thumbelina, Troll in Central Park, Pebble and the Penguin. All three of those.
Wait, have we done a Troll in Central Park?
We haven't done any of those three.
Oh, good. Do we need to?
No, but the one after it we did, which is Anastasia.
Right.
Which is excellent. I think. Yeah. I thought it was good.
It's better than this.
And it was a movie. I mean, none of the history is good, but it's a movie. That friends, that's what you go to the Dollar Theater for and pretend it's a history quiz.
Does anybody even know what a Dollar Theater is anymore? Do they still exist?
Yeah.
They do?
Yeah, I doubt it's a dollar. I bet it's five.
Up the road.
God bless them.
I thought Redbox had replaced every Dollar Theater in existence.
Down Upper Roswell, about, I don't know, 5 miles from me.
And they had these big, beautiful signs, all new, updated,
full bar, surround sound, recliners, you know, those kind of reclining seats. Grand opening, April 2020. Now,
what happened then, Nick?
Well, you see, they opened with the newest Marvel movie. 6 months, no COVID happened. Mm. And so after dusting away them cobwebs, I think they've reopened.
All right. They were going to open an Alamo Draft House in Doraville, but that never happened.
No. I mean, I don't have money, but if I did have money, that's the kind of thing I would do. I would open like a pretentious second-run theater, and we'd have fun.
Yeah.
I would. Cineprov would be there. Oh, remember the days.
Mm. Let's all chip in and buy the Plaza or something.
Oh, yeah, right. The Plaza downtown. It's like $10 million.
Oh, yeah.
I hope they reopen. I hope we can go back.
How about Cineprov or the Plaza? Because the Plaza has reopened.
No. So, okay, this will probably all get cut. But the downstairs auditorium is reopened. That's fine. And they've opened the upstairs one, but it's not wired so that we can do shows there yet.
Mm.
So I'm talking about Cineprov being able to return in full.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, our audience is generally between, or let's say, 30 and 100, usually on the higher end of that average, so about 45 to 60.
Yeah.
Which is perfect for that small theater, because if you have a theater that can seat 250, you'd rather have a big opener and not our comedy show. So that's what we're worried about. But in the meantime, Candace is doing... Candace, our regular panelist and member of Cineprov, is doing fun and sexy trivia at Felix's every Monday. So if you want to see Candace, which you should, support Candace and all of her ongoings at Felix's bar.
In terms of this movie, though, I mean...
Can we talk about anything
else? Is this a Cineprov movie, you think?
No, absolutely not.
No.
Because there's not enough... What are we going to do, kick around a child with a speech impediment? So this kid...
Okay, I just want to get this out of the way, and I'm going to give my usual disclaimer I give to kid actors. I have no idea who this guy is.
He didn't do anything else.
I don't know what he's doing now. I hope he's successful. I hope he's happy. I wish him all the best. Fucking hell, is he a bad actor?
This kid, here's the thing. This is why stunt casting is stupid. If this wasn't had a live-action segment, get Christine Cavanaugh to do a kid's voice. Have her be Tommy Pickles for a second, because that would have been fine, and she could say the things she needs to say. Meanwhile, this poor kid, I feel... Because at the end, he has to do the Charleston next to an animated puppet.
Yeah.
And goddammit, it's the worst green screen I've ever seen.
Oh.
That kid is... Oh my God!
It looks like a Z grade version of Zippity Doodle from Song of the South.
What he looks like is
Splashdown is more realistic.
What he looks like is a cutout from a Terry Gilliam cartoon in Monty Python.
He is, and then they have the audacity, the bald face audacity, to make the fucking pig dance the same as this poor child, and the pig is trying to invent joints it doesn't have to do this little shimmy this poor child in pajamas is doing after they give him the funeral scene from Snow White, where all these sad fucking animals are crying over this kid who they've never seen in human form before. It's, dude, this movie wants there to be an emotional payoff to us caring about a rooster who is a dick.
Okay, you know what movie it doesn't take the same premise, but kind of takes this approach and does it actually well? Labyrinth. It's about a kid who lives in a fantasy world. They get to go to that fantasy world, and then they come back, but at the end they realize, hey, the fantasy still has some value, so they're all dancing at the end.
Fuck you for making me think that they're Frank Oz version of this, because that would have been good if there were puppets instead of animation. And then
beware Chanticleer's crotch.
Oh my God.
Oh boy.
Could you imagine, hello there, I'm Chanticleer the Rooster. And it's just David Bowie vaguely thrusting in the direction of a sexy chicken.
Well, that's kind of what happens in this movie, except it's way less effective because
it's
Glenn Campbell, which I didn't even know who the hell that was.
I mean, fine, you're not cool enough to know who Glenn Campbell...
He's a rhinestone cowboy, damn it.
And you don't get the blue plate special either. But at the same time, just tilt the timer back just a second. What is it with these animators and drawing boobs on animals? Because holy shit, those chickens had like huge boobs. And you're just like, why?
What's a bird version of a furry?
Probably
first
a
of
furry.
All, it's a chicken, so it has breasts. But then you're like, let's make them like, and you're just like, there was a,
those hands are thick, girls.
God damn it, Matt, don't make it sexy. But here's the thing.
I mean, every time I go to KFC, I have to hide, you know, the tent that I form in my pants whenever I order the chicken breast. I'm just saying.
The oh lemon my. Spice is Spanish bread.
Mm-hmm. I want it hot and crispy.
Oh, my God. Well, and it's so funny, too, because later on, he's supposed to be hooking up with this, dancing girl, I guess, which we'll get to, because that scene gets really weird.
Who's a pheasant, not a chicken.
She's a pheasant, and she's forced into this. Like, if you want to be a star, it's full-on, like, Harvey Weinstein.
Can we explain how level. These movies, these two different plots kind of converge in this movie? We get the storybook opening where Shanti goes away, and I just call them Shanti throughout my notes. We get the mom reading a storybook to her kid, which, fine. And then somehow that big owl shows up and turns everything animated.
And then he turns the kid with the annoying voice into a cat.
So the only important plot point here, because this movie has one plot point which should be resolved immediately, but it isn't. Chanticleer is supposed to crow... And his song, which at the beginning it's fine, it's a catchy song, not only rises the sun, but clears the sky. It's a very pointed image that he, at one point, while he's singing, a storm cloud shows up and he tells it to go away and it goes away. So the fact that they have ostracized Chanticleer means that the storm will not abide. And therefore, it's like breaking the dikes, it's flooding the farm, they're rescuing calves that have run away, like, and also, let's be clear, this is the worst soundstage I've ever seen, and you can see the wall that they're pretending is the sunrise, and so, like, this poor calf is running away, and, dude, it is so cheap. The Universal Twister ride is more realistic than this nonsense.
Two questions about that. First, the whole thing was to drive Shanti away so that the owls would live in perpetual darkness and eventually feast on the farm animals, right?
Correct.
Okay, so two things. First, we know the sun comes up without Shanti. So why the hell did it stop? Second, in terms of the rain, this is a farm. Farms kind of need rain. Well, so okay. Is he just chasing away every single storm that happens?
That was my thought, too. But at this point... Also, we haven't mentioned this yet, but Phil Harris is the guy who's narrating it.
Yes, Patu.
The late great. And if you don't know who that is, you do, because he is the voice of your childhood. He was Baloo in The Jungle Book. He was Little John in
Robin Hood.
And he's just kind of a Disney hanger-on. And then Disney pissed him off at one point. I forget exactly how. It's a different movie for a different time when Daniel brings back Disremembered. So when you hear him, it's just Baloo talking because he just has that voice.
Well, it's old man Baloo. It's like, men of bare necessities, those simple bare necessities.
So what you're saying was it was just improvised when he couldn't tie his own shoes?
Is that what's going on?
Oh, yeah. That is another plot point where...
And by the way, those are just Mickey Mouse shoes.
Yeah,
right?
a five-year-old has to teach an adult dog how to tie his shoes, and my God, that sounds like a bloody Salvador Dali painting.
Well, but here's the thing. It would be nice if it mattered in any way. Because what you would do is introduce that he can't tie his shoes, the kid teaches him how to tie his shoes, and then he ties the knot that ties up the fucking owl. But he doesn't do that. The fact is, at the end, he has tied shoes, and you're just like, well, good on you, dog, who has bunions, apparently. Whatever. Okay, so we have Eddie Deason, who plays a magpie, and you can just stick it back in 1991 and keep Eddie Deason... I'm sorry. The greatest thing he ever did was voice Mandark on Dexter's Lab. And then other than that, he's just like, ha, 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 I'm a sexual predator.
To be fair...
And a thief, but he's a magpie, what do you expect?
To be fair, he was in Grease, I think. He was one of the John Travolta's gang.
He was also in War Games.
He was, and...
Meatballs.
If you're an MST3K fan, he was in Laser Blast.
I mean, first of all, Eddie Deason has been in a lot of good movies, but I think he has been
canceled, as they say, for being a lot of things.
Yeah.
And also, his voice is just a knife in an animation film. Like, it's not funny. He's
it
just
works
complaining.
For Dexter's Lab.
Because they know what to do with him! I'm sorry! And I guess, why not, I'll announce this. Later this month, because it's an animation month, we will be doing Dexter's Lab Ego Trip, the first dystopian movie I ever saw as a child, and it's truly something.
I think that's that movie somehow planted my fandom for Doctor Who, currently.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, and also, it's better than it has any right to be. Like, it doesn't deserve to be as good as it is, but it's also Gedi Tartakovsky, who is truly a remarkable animation director, and this has all the remnants of someone who gave up on life a long time ago. Other than that, we've got Chris Plummer, we already mentioned. We got Charles Nelson Reilly, who, if you don't know, look up the Weird Al song about him.
Look up the old SNL sketch with Will Ferrell's James Lipton interviewing Alec Baldwin as Charles Nelson Reilly.
But he was like... There you go. He was like a very fey, outwardly gay, like very over-the-top comedic actor. He was always the center square in the...
Well, that was Paul Lynde back in the day. But
no,
Charles...
but he was also there. He wasn't the center square, but he was always there. He was also in Laugh-In. Like, he's been doing that forever. And he died not too long ago, but he was in All Dogs Go to Heaven as well.
No, he was in a couple Don Bluth movies, I think.
What a strange stable of actors, that man. anyway, other than that, we've got no one in this movie. Really, truly not. Like, we could just dive through this plot, like, real quick, because nothing really happens in this movie. Like,
yeah, the animals who just totally turn on Chanticleer and just verbally abuse him till he leaves the farm now go to the city to apologize. They need him to solve their climactic disaster.
Well, first, it's flooded, so they're on some sort of a raft to get to the city. Yeah, but there's so many weird things where, like, the owls try to capture them, including Charles Nelson Reilly, who's the Duke's nephew, I think.
Yeah. He's like old... He's Henry the Hawk from Looney Tunes.
Oh.
Except he's more malicious.
More malicious than Henry the Chicken Hawk. I don't think so, good sir. You don't get more malicious than that.
30% less rapey, though.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
And then we have... I mean, eventually, I mean, there's like these weird fight scenes. They end up in like an aqueduct pipe, which doesn't make any sense. But
did that happen in the first American Tale, or was that Fievel Goes West?
First one.
Oh, first one. All right.
Yeah. Hey, you want pipes? Bluth can draw you some pipes. From there. They end up coming across the big city. They're trapped in like a chest, like a trunk. And Eddie Deason tries to murder them all by panicking and drilling holes in the side because that's what magpies do.
He's okay. A claustrophobe.
So we've mentioned the magpie. The other farm animals are the dog that Phil Harris voices. And then we get this mouse who is meant to be one of those intelligent meeses whose catchphrase is literally, "Jump in Jehoshaphat!" And every time she spoke, I just thought to myself, what special time, what special day? It's Woodland Critter Christmas. Hail! Come on, Matt, do it with me. Hail Satan!
Hail Satan.
It's a South Park episode, you kids.
Now you know how I feel.
I do declare that the Antichrist will be born any day, jumping Jehoshaphat!
God help me. Okay, so the woman who plays her is Sandy Duncan, who more than...
Wait, Sandy Duncan?
Yeah, she was the mouse.
Oh!
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so Sandy Duncan, for those of you who don't know, is just kind of a jack of all trades. I don't know how to put it. She was the one who first redid the Broadway revival of Peter Pan and got like a handful of Tonys, among other things. She was on The Muppet Show. She did the TV adaptation of Pinocchio. Like, she was in the new Scooby-Doo movies. Like, she's just one of these voice actresses. She also was in Fox and the Hound and My Little Pony and yada, yada, yada.
I'm seriously trying to remember where I first heard about her, and I swear it was some sort of joke about her and Sammy Davis Jr. having glass eyes.
God help me.
Oh, boy.
I will say, the reason she works is she's a voice actress. God help me. Like, I hate stunt casting. I hate it just because most of these people, like, I don't care if I hear George Clooney in a movie. I want to hear the actual movie, man. Like, filmmaking is an art form. And when, like, The Lion King, it works. I mean, it works in Aladdin. Because Robin Williams, not a voice actor, but he's still Robin goddamn Williams. And he can highlight it. But you know what they didn't do? They didn't pick a known entity to be Aladdin or Jasmine. Here, it feels like they put the stunt casting in all the wrong places because they needed an adorable toe-headed child to play a drowned victim for 6 seconds. And you know what? Wasn't worth it. Here, the characters who were are the ones voiced by people who can do the voice acting. Now our guest listener knows why we edit this shit down. It's a lot of me being angry and not funny, but then sometimes kind of funny.
I'll have to edit that slurp out.
Anyway, so after coming across the big city, there's a montage of them looking for someone they can't find. Turns out, he's a star. He's called the King, because apparently this turned into an Elvis movie.
Okay, another thing. They apparently haven't heard of him since he left the farm, and here he's a superstar in the city. I just want to say, even the Peacocks in the X-Files knew who Elvis was. So how in God's name did he just fly under the radar?
I'm also going to say...
The farm doesn't have cable.
No. The Peacocks from the X-Files, the inbred family with no electricity in their house, knew who Elvis was.
I'm going to do you one better. How long has it been since he's left the farm? It seems like a week. I don't know. This movie doesn't tell us anything about anything, other than the fact that an owl can turn children... Which I guess I don't want to ever redo. But we'll have to
at some point.
Okay, so the weird thing about the whole Big Grand Duke musical number, it's Christopher Plummer. I mean, even Matt here said that was Colonel Von Trapp, right? Or Captain or whatever he was in Sound of Music. He doesn't sing. He's just talking his way through it, and then his chorus repeats back to him what he just said, but they're singing it. It's so damn weird. It's like... I don't know, the composer was drunk and on a deadline and decided, okay, you know what, this will get us through this part. But none of the songs here, with the exception of maybe the Vegas number Shanty does, adds anything to the movie. And they actually cast, you know, a big musical veteran. So what was the point?
Well, and also, have some dignity and do, you know, A, anything. But B, if you're going to cast, let me put it this way. There's a reason why... Disney sometimes brought in singers, but they never brought in voice actors. You hire the voice actors, and then you guest the singers to sing the tracks. Mm. If you wanted Glenn Campbell to do an Elvis impersonation, do it for the singing, not the voice acting.
Oh,
because he's just
Lord.
A little whiny little bitch. He's like, oh, they hated me back on the farm! And you're just like, dude... Tone it down 30% and hire someone to be a chicken. I'm sorry.
Here's a joke for all you old-timers. He's less Elvis Presley and more Pat Boone.
Whackity smackity no. I mean, but, like, there's also this, like, I don't know, it's not a reverence, because if it was a reverence, it would be doing Glenn Campbell bits. But he's trying to do Elvis. Hire Nick Cage. Hire Quentin Tarantino. He was already Elvis by this point.
So he'll be licking the pheasant's feet.
Hey, man. I left the farm, man, because they didn't respect me. Nice tootsies.
Technically speaking, Nick Cage was already Elvis. I think that came out the same year, Wild at Heart.
And then, I mean, there's anyone they could have chosen from, what was that, Something to Vegas? Was it...
Leaving Las Vegas?
Oh, 3,000 miles to Vegas. Kurt Russell! Get Kurt Russell in this movie!
Oh, could you imagine? And that's a fuck you to Disney, because wasn't that he the last thing that Walt Disney said?
Yep.
The last words out of that old man's mouth was Kurt
Russell's name.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Douglas.
Kirk Douglas.
Kurt Russell. One day he's going to escape from somewhere and I want it to be a Disney property. What? No? No! And then he went to hell or whatever. Hey, you can't support the Nazis that long, Walt, and expect to go anywhere else. I'm sorry.
Also, to be fair, Disney wasn't that old when he died.
No, he died of lung cancer from all those cigarettes.
Yeah, when he was 66, I think.
Yeah, look at the photos they photoshopped out them cigarettes from.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that guy. That guy was a chimney, but
he was. Anyway, so let's talk about Chanticleer. First of all, pick a name a kid can say when he has a speech impediment. It's almost mean to the child actor.
This kid sounds like Ike from South Park.
He does. But also, as a rule, if you're highlighting voice actors, make sure that they're speaking to the microphone. But sometimes a kid sounds like he's at a distance, but he's not. I don't know what's going on with this script. I don't know what's going on with the set. I don't know what's going on with anything. But he sounds almost completely different in the live-action stuff. I know it's a boom mic, but it's just, it's all rough. I feel bad for the kid. I feel bad for the parents.
Why do I get the feeling that they didn't have enough animation to carry the movie through, so they added the live-action scenes because it was a lot cheaper to do that than to do more animation, and they just shoehorned the kid in?
I looked at this up. It cost almost half as much to do this than Beauty and the Beast, so I think you're right. And that also explains why some of the action scenes are choppy. Like the scene where they're being sucked down the storm drain and all that stuff, like, very action-packed, but it cuts to almost Hanna-Barbera level of every other scene. Like, it seems jumpy, and that's what I think it is, as opposed to An American Tale or Land Before Time. And Land Before Time is brutal, and it's brusque, and it's horrible, and it's funny, and it's comedic, and it's sad, but, like, the joke I made when we did it 8 years ago now on this podcast was the scene where they have the narrator kicking Sarah the Triceratops. He goes, Sarah sounds bad because she went the wrong way. But she is crying with her paws over her eyes, but there's rain falling, the thunder is booming, everything is flowing, and nothing is happening on screen but a girl being sad. Here, there's action happening, and they used half as many frames, and it is a goddamn shame! Plus, this movie looks like trash!
Plus, the plot makes no sense. I mean, apparently, somehow, what's happening on this animated farm's happening to the kid's family, so
what's happening now is happening now.
So what's the city? Is it like the kid's hometown? Does he live outside of Vegas or something? What's going on?
No, he lives outside of Roswell, New Mexico, which is why this shit keeps happening.
Yeah.
Oh no, the aliens are back!
Although, considering Don Bluth, it might also be Branson, Missouri that this kid lives near.
He's near Salt Lake City. He's this close to turning. He's this close to becoming Mormon. I almost said going clear, but that's the other ones.
The other ones?
Yeah, Glenn, the Chanticleer is actually married to all of the chickens, all the hens on the farm at the same time.
I just need another chick.
You know, and Chicken Run did that as a much better joke.
Oh, God, can you imagine comparing this to Chicken Run and Chicken Run coming out on top? What world is this?
Is that a Stay Tuned? It's got to be more than 10 years old at this point.
Oh, it is. Yes, of course. Is that a Zach Braff?
No, it was Mel Gibson in Chicken Run.
Oh, no, Chicken Run. What was the one with Zach Braff? Chicken Little.
Chicken Little.
God. Is that more than 10 years old?
Of course it is. I saw it at a pediatrician's office.
Well, anyway, this is also in Shanti's performances in The City, where we meet Goldie, we meet some, and, you know, we meet his manager. We know that his manager is trying to keep the farm animals away from Shanti so he doesn't go back to the farm.
And so he makes Goldie the Pheasant, you know, G-rated put out for Chanticleer.
Yeah, wearing a G-rated teddy or whatever she's wearing.
Oh, this is also where there's a musical number from the bouncers at the club that Shanti's performing at. That sounds almost exactly like the Men in Tights number.
That's right. God,
they keep chanting.
We'll punch you out! We'll kick you out! All right! It was close to that.
Well, I mean, Fuck, that was a better joke than I was going to make. You're good. You go like, yes, the classic Bowser song. Oompa Loompa Doompity-Doo. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
What do you get when you've drunk too much?
You don't have to save my joke.
Vision.
I bailed on it. Anyway, so from this point on, like, there's like a...
And you're no longer a hunk.
Okay, we're not saving that
joke,
Matt. Okay,
so no, just for half a second. There's a candy store in the Marietta Square, and there's a book I read called Candy Freak. And God bless it, the man is just nuts about candy. And he went around the country to, like, these small little manufacturers to chase down candy. It was a great little story. But it motivated me to go to this store in the Marietta Square called Rocket Fizz. And that's all it is. It's all little small little candy bars. And there's something called a big honk. And a big honk bar has chocolate in it. It's a big honk. And so we just buy random candy bars that we never had before. It's all fun. But then there's something called a big honk. And I just, there's just something about just picking up a big honk.
This guy's staying in the episode. This is hilarious.
There's a white chocolate honk. And the black and the dark chocolate honk. And you're just like, oh, God. And I mean, I had myself a Zagna, I had myself a Twilight bar, but then there's something about the big honk.
And do they require you to pronounce it that way at the store when you're ordering?
I did for the poor woman who was checking out the groceries.
Yeah, that's why he's no longer allowed at this candy store anymore.
But don't worry, I have a jaunty mustache, so I can go back and get another big
Oh, yeah. Well, this is why he's a VIP at Felix's, though, because he's always looking for the big honk.
And...
I've been taking pictures of the candy bars I've been eating, in case you're curious. It's on my Twitter feed. Check out Required Reading on Twitter. Just corresponding with people like, this candy bar's pretty good, 4 stars.
Should we skip ahead a little bit in this?
We're trying to talk about everything but this movie. I'm guessing maybe
okay,
it's
so
time
the big
to...
At the end of the movie, guess what? The cat and the rooster hang out. After the dog fucking tries to kill the rooster with a frying pan, like Tangled style. He just takes it out.
Well, I think it was the mouse, wasn't it? It was the mouse initially. No, you're right. It was the dog.
Goddamn dog hits the rooster in the face.
Yeah, so the great hero.
The king has left the building.
The great heroic cock spends the last part of the movie unconscious. That's what happens if you drink too much.
No. For a long time in this movie, the king cock is truly flaccid, and they're trying to wake him back up so that he can emerge victorious and penetrate the rainstorm. And
cock-a-doodle.
Mm-hmm. I will also say, do you think the director was just like, no, Glenn, don't worry. You're unconscious the whole time, but I feel like I should act this. No. Don't you dare worry about acting. You go to craft services and have a sandwich. We're going to do the movie for a while because you're unconscious.
And he was just voice recording, so it was like, all right, you know what? Just take 30 minutes and we'll finish the movie.
It seems like I wasn't in the script for about 12 pages. It's only a 17-page script, so you think I'd be in it for... No. You're the star. Your title... The title is you're the Rock-a-Doodle. He's like, but I'm unconscious. Yes, but you're looking good while you're doing it.
You know, Rock-o-Doodle was my porn name back in the day.
Not Cock-a-Doodle.
No, Rock-a-Doodle. Cock-a-Doodle's too obvious.
No, he was a solo actor. That's where the doodle comes in.
Did you have that hair?
These are the jokes, guys. I don't know what to tell you in TV land. To those of you in South Sudan who are listening, that was the joke I have. Hey, this is the third to the last episode of the season. We've appeared on the charts in 36 countries. I don't know why. I don't. Trust me, I'm in a basement not knowing why.
Well, that's because of the whiskey there, Nick. Let's be honest.
The whiskey, Nick?
Yes, the whiskey neck. All right, so we get another thing where at one point there's this scene where the owl...
Another thing with the scene.
Thing with a scene with the characters and the action and the gliding.
And anyway, we're verbing the adjective
and the owl. And the owl goes full Ursula at the end of Little Mermaid and grows to gigantic size.
He's turning into a tornado is what's happening in that. But there's that whole thing. They bring Shanty back. They're trying to wake him up. The kitten... And he tries to kill the boy at one point with, psychic hands.
I thought he was strangling him.
Dude, he uses the force, for Christ's sake.
Yes, he does.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Also, Chris Plummer, as a Jedi... Ooh, shit.
I keep confusing him and Max von Sydow, because I was just about to say, Chris Plummer was in Star Wars, and it's like, no.
No.
Wrong guy.
No.
I also confuse him with what's his name, Chris Lee too,
because they're just a bunch of old people who I assume would kill someone if they needed to.
Yeah.
Right. It's like when you hear the story where Peter Jackson was explaining what it sounded like to stab someone. He's like,
"Sir, dude, get Chris Lee as the owl in this movie."
I mean, I'm not going to say Plummer does a bad job. I'm fine with Chris Plummer. The problem is, and this is something I learned from the great Kelsey Grammer, the reason why he prefers to do The Simpsons over doing movies is with animated movies, he's by himself in a booth. When he's doing The Simpsons, they record so they can hear each other at the same time so he can react. Chris Plummer clearly has no idea what he's reacting to. So each take sounds different. That's why this movie feels so janky, right? The kid is not acting against anyone or anything except for his mom. In the scenes where he's good, he's talking to his mom because he can look at her, hear her, and act.
Man, this movie would have been so much better if the Grand Owl at one point told off Cousin Merle.
Now, it turns out the rain was because of the goddamn rooster not showing up.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. Fuck it. The rooster shows up and saves the goddamn day. I don't know what to tell you. The rooster shows up, he sings Rock-a-Doodle, because this is the name of the movie, and if you don't say it, apparently the communists win the war. And so, at the end, he says Rock-a-Doodle, the sun rises, the storm goes away, and they find the calf that apparently drowned.
They think the kid's dead, but they bring him back to life.
Clap
I guess
your hands if you believe.
100%. Something. Because that rat, the mouse cries a single tear, and the boy wakes up and then dances the Charleston with a chicken, which is, I think, now, thanks to Obama, illegal. You can't just dance with chickens.
Can we also just mention in this fight, quote-unquote fight scene, where the owl's trying to prevent Shanti from waking up, it's in daylight. You clearly see the sun.
That's the other thing. The whole thing is that they're this pissed me off.
Woo! I can tell.
What is the goddamn rules of this? It's like when we did Twilight. Can the vampires see the sun or not? Because here, they're harassing these animals in the sunlight. And I'm sorry, if a flashlight can bother you, the goddamn sun wins! I'm sorry!
Yes.
This movie, if you're going to make stupid rules for a stupid movie, you gotta keep... That's the one thing.
Well, I mean... If camera flashes, and there is a scene earlier during the pipes where they turn a camera flash on to get the owls get away, if the camera flash can frighten the owls away, what about the fact that there is a goddamn kitten there? Wouldn't that have the same effect?
Hi, I'm here for Owls Gone Wild. And that's not even a joke. It's
sad
truth.
You're going to see some Owls Gone Wild in this
especially
movie.
At the Hooters.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so at the end of the day, it turns out the kid isn't dead. The movie has to end. And then they zippity-doo-dah into the credits.
And it turns out chicken, and this is something I learned today, well, actually other days ago, chickens and pheasants are actually interfertile. And that's actually a plot point here, because there's two little hybrid birds.
Well, I sure am glad that Don Bluth looked up biology of farm animals and managed to get that right. I mean, that really saved the movie at that point for me.
I don't know if looking at Farm Hub is exactly research, man.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That
you're bad to the bone, man.
That pheasant's fertile as fuck.
Straight out of New Zealand. Okay. Farm Hub.
So we've made this joke so many times, but like the idea that like a sexual awakening happens because of the Robin Hood with the foxes or with Rescue Rangers with Gadget or whatever, or we talked about it with Shrek too.
Because
right?
I don't want to talk about furries. Did you see the new Chippendale on Disney Plus?
Not yet.
It was fine.
I know he dances with Robert Rabbit. And I was like,
yes.
I don't know if I need to see that.
Dan Marsh and Mr. Natural are in that movie.
Mr. Natural.
Mr. Natural.
They licensed our crumb shit.
Yes.
If you haven't seen the documentary, see Crumb.
Oh, it's one
masterpiece.
One of my favorite movies. Crumb is, but
masterpiece.
Yes, they somehow licensed Mr. Natural.
If anyone's sexual awakening was because of this movie, seek medical help. Watch the movie Zoo and then seek medical help.
Well, I mean, I can kind of understand. I mean, Eddie Deason in that voice as the magpie.
Oh, if you like being verbally abused by a man, that might work.
My little chickadee.
Okay, let's wrap this up. Other than Matt's endorsement of Farm Hub, at the end of this, this movie turns into a dance number. They zippity-doo-dah across the old end credits. And then this movie mercifully ends before it answers any questions. It's just like, no, no, no! We're good. You know how Aesop ended? Yeah, just with a smash cut. And then a fade to credits like it's a commercial break in a TV show. Woo! Thoughts? Daniel, wrap us up.
Oh, boy, this made no sense. The script desperately needed a rewrite. I'm not sure if it had to be cut or anything, but it's got multiple people telling the same story, which you can't do multiple perspectives in a fantasy, or else it's not a fantasy, for one. The acting's bad. At least the print on Amazon. Don Bluth's usually a very talented animator, but this looked like garbage. And I'm not surprised it bankrupted his studio. I'm sad it happened, but if this is all they could do at this point, then frankly, that's what they deserved.
Yeah.
Good is a creative concept as opposed to endless remakes and sequels of our day, but it's not executed very well. Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
I'm going to both agree and kind of modify Matt slightly. The problem for me is that this is an old story done poorly. Like, it doesn't even, like, have that Don Bluth originality to me. It just stinks of laziness. Like, the problem for me is truly that All Dogs Go to Heaven, which we just did this season, earlier this season, feels like a more complete idea. But even that feels like they're treading water and trying to keep their head above water. This movie to me feels like that, not only literally because of the flood, but metaphorically. There's no base. There's no grounded nature. This movie just feels like they're grasping at straws, which is a shame. Like, this is perhaps why, not that he should have stayed with Disney, but Don Bluth is a creative, and he doesn't understand the rest of the business.
That's a vibe I'm getting, given how his studio's ended. A brilliant animator, maybe not a great money guy.
Maybe it would have been better if he started with 20th Century Fox, or, I mean, we talked about Shrek this season. The thing about Shrek was they essentially created that animation studio to make Shrek work. I just wish he had someone behind him to keep him to that part of it, because this just feels like another in a long streak. Like, when you're a brilliant something, and you make 12 things in your entire lifetime, and the middle five are garbage, he's lucky to have gotten out of that trench. This movie feels like it shouldn't have ever been made, and that's a shame for someone who does something good. Anyway, here's the idea. We're out of time, and I love you for listening to me this long, and Daniel will cut most of what I've said because he's better at this than I am. I don't cut anything, which is why sometimes in my episodes, if someone belches, that's one of mine. You're welcome, America. This is the last month of season 8. We're giving you cartoons because that's what you, the American people, like more than reality. And I understand. But come July 22nd, we're entering our 9th year doing this. Now, the wonderful, beautiful Mr. Matt Quinn has done something for me, which is re-listen to a bunch of our old episodes. Unfortunately, we're ending our Patreon. There's a lot of reason for that. First of all, I have a second child. Turns out, I don't sleep a lot, so doing extra episodes doesn't happen anymore. But we're giving you a gift of 10 old episodes. But as a Christmas gift to you, the American people, and also the Yemenis who are listening, and Russians, and Germans, and Aussies. We're going to let you pick 4 episodes that we've done in the past that used to be behind the paywall, the first 100 episodes, and we will redo them for you. Now, Matt has gone through them, and we released 10 of them. Those are out. The Bond movies, they're out. But otherwise, anything in those old 10?
Those old 100.
Old movies, we will redo for you, the listener. Because now that we're getting...
Are you sitting down?
You're sitting down. You're sitting down. This season, we've had 150,000 listeners.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Coxey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Sir Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.